What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another KO Breakdown. I'm your host, the Fight Analyst, Garrett Kerman. With me, as always, is my man, Joe Danger himself, Jesse Hobson. What's up, man? How's it going?
What's up, dude? What's up, man? Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, as always, man. We've been chopping it up. We're ready to go. UFC 280 on tap. I'm fucking excited. I am so excited. I've been waiting for this fight card. I've been waiting to see Charles Oliveira take on Islam Makhachev. I'm so stoked. How are you doing? How are you feeling on this great fight week?
Yeah, it's weird. And I think you kind of put it into perspective earlier via Twitter. You know, the gods never gave us Tony versus Khabib, but we do get to see, Makhachev or whatever versus Mr. Charlie Olives. And I think that is a good... Like it's a good,
consolation prize, right?
Yeah. As long as it happens, because we still have time. I think it will happen. It's right around the corner. I'm just getting tired of, I don't understand Olives' cockiness. Don't get me wrong. He's beat some guys, right?
Right.
But it just seems like
he thinks he's hot shit. Does he not?
Well, you it's know? Like he's surrounded by this group of guys, they all, and it's not just him that thinks he's McGregor, it's his entire crew that thinks they're all McGregor. And it's so odd to want to listen to someone talk shit and then have someone else translate it. So it's just such a weird exchange. And I don't really like Islam either, but this is making me like Islam that much more. So I'll take
I kind of agree with that notion. I feel like he's just walking around puffing out his chest. And, I guess when you're a champion, you kind of have to have that mentality because you're going against the best, like Islam Makhachev. You have to feel like you're the best, or you're just going to falter. You know, going against, elite competition time in and time again, you kind of have to have that belief in yourself. So I kind of get it, but it's getting to the point where, I'm kind of over it. And I feel like Islam's really gonna. We'll get into it. We'll get into
yeah,
it,
but there's still a few other fights we're gonna talk about before we get there.
Yeah, right. We got 13 fights on tap. UFC 280. It starts at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I will be having my cup of coffee while I'll be watching this fight card. I'm looking forward to it. So let's get right down to business. All right, our first fight up is in the women's bantamweight division between Lena Landsberg and Carol Hosa. Right now, Hosa minus 325 to come back on Landsberg plus 270. Who do you got?
You know, Hosa, she should win this fight, but I'm not willing to bet it because of how she looked against Sarah McMahon. Yep. Now, it seems as if she's been working on her grappling, which is good, you're in the UFC. You probably should do that. But Hosa's saving grace will be that Lena Landsberg
is fucking 40 years old.
Well, Sarah McMahon was fucking 40 years old. Look how well that happened.
Yeah, but I'm hoping that it actually plays into the fight this time. And then also I wanted to mention that Lena Landsberg, her Tapology photo is from probably about 15 years ago. It looks like a dating profile picture. She needs to update that shit, lose, and then retire. I like Carol Hosa via decision.
Yeah, I'm taking Carol Hosa here. I'm very reluctant to bet on her considering what she fucking did in her last fight against Sarah McMahon, but here we are. Minus 325 is definitely not a price I want to pay on her. I do think she wins via decision as well. I do think she's definitely the better striker. She throws some really good output. I think she's just going to be able to – she's going to be just too much for Lena Landsberg. Landsberg, she's, like you said, in her 40s now. She's slowing down. I don't think she's going to be able to keep up with her on the feet, on the mat, wherever this fight goes. Hosa does have her covered. Hosa to win via decision would put it at minus 120. Cuts the juice down to a little bit, but I still need some type of plus money to play any props on Hosa. So – I'm ultimately going to not bet this fight. I'm probably not going to watch this fight. And I am – I'll probably make some food during this fight. I mean, 10 a.m., maybe make some eggs, some
It's
some
a good breakfast. coffee one.
Yeah, make some eggs, some breakfast for the fam, and wait for the next fight, which is a pretty decent fight in the flyweight division between Muhammad Makhachev and Malcolm Gordon right now. Makhachev -1,150 over Malcolm Gordon, who's +750. Also, we got to say, what's up to our man, Forrest Daniels? Hello, sir. How are you? Thank you for joining us. As always, we are glad to have you with us, breaking down these fights, putting money into your pocket, and just talking about it. I want you guys to come here, talk with us, to, you know, have some conversations with us, and talk about some fights. UFC 280 on tap. We're here. We're here. We're getting it in. All right. Moving forward. 125-pound fight. Muhammad Makhachev, Malcolm Gordon. Who do you got?
Yeah, before we get into that, Forrest, if you are interested, we just recorded a video for LFA and one on Prime Video. Those will be going live very soon. So if you're interested in those, man, just let me know and we will send you those your way. You know, about back to the fight. I've never been too impressed with Malcolm Gordon and his nickname X, Malcolm X. Like, that's cool. Like, I get it. The significance, boo. It's super boring, though. Come on. Come up with something original, my man. And not to mention, this guy, dude has old man face. How are you 32 years old and look like Cliff Huxtable? Seriously, though, Makhachev is the real deal. I think he rolls here. Probably another submission win, as I think it'll be that much easier to get Gordon to the ground than it was against Charles Johnson. You know, I think Johnson came in, he knew what he was doing as far as defending the takedown. I do think Makhachev wants to make a statement. He wants to make a statement on this card. He wants to make a statement in Abu Dhabi. He gets it the win via submission.
I'm 100% agreeing with you there. I'm just a person that loves to fade Malcolm Gordon. I did in pretty much every one of his fights. I'm 2-2 right now in the UFC fading his fights. He won his last two, unfortunately. So I've been 0-2 in his last two fights, but here we are fading him again. I got Makhachev. He's definitely going to roll here inside two rounds. Makhachev is better everywhere in terms of striking, in terms of grappling, especially in the grappling. He's beyond better than Malcolm Gordon in those regards. I just don't think Gordon has enough to really withstand the onslaught that's coming his way with Muhammad Makhachev. I think he goes in there, gets the job done inside two rounds, maybe in round one. But yeah, he's definitely going to make a statement here. He wants to make a statement. You're talking about a guy that landed the most takedowns in flyweight history in his last fight. This time he's going in there and maybe gets one of the fastest finishes in flyweight history. Who knows? We'll see. But I got Makhachev getting the job done fairly easily.
I think it's round one as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same. All right, next up, we got a fight in the 185-pound division, the middleweight division, between Armin Petrosian and AJ Dobson. Right now, line is set at Petrosian -205. The comeback on Dobson +175. Who do you have?
Yo, I've never known how to say that guy's name. Like, I see it, and it doesn't look like it says Petrosian. Like, so whenever I'm, writing up my notes, I'm like, it just doesn't compute in my head. Like, Petrosian sounds like a condom, brand. You know, why does AJ Dobson look like Jerry Cannonier in his pathology picture? Like, serious question here. You know, despite the loss, I was really impressed with Armin Petrosian in his last go. He has heavy hands and he's always moving. You know, Dobson gets controlled by Malcoon in his last fight for the entire fight. But so while Malcoon and Petrosian are two completely different fighters, I do feel like Dobson should be dealt another loss here. I like Petrosian via KO. I am going to have to agree with my friend Forrest Daniels here. I think I put a second round as well. I just feel like he's the better fighter all around. And if he needs to wrestle, he will. But I just don't see it getting done like that. He's going to find the KO, and your boys will be counting those dollar bills.
I'm going on a limb here and going with AJ Dobson. I've not been as impressed with Petrosian as you have been. I feel like he can get taken down. He can get controlled by Dobson. Dobson's pretty big for the division. He's pretty tall. He's long. I don't think it's going to be an absolute wash on the feet for Petrosian. I think Dobson's got good fundamentals and he's got some good power. I just think he'll be able to mix it up. you know, press him against the cage, take him down, wear him out. Petrosian is good, but he has to keep at distance. He's got to utilize his kicks. He's got to utilize, you know, the power that he has, the advantage that he has on the feet. And I just don't think he's been able to do that recently. He's always been in close fights. He always lets his opponents dictate the pace, come forward and pressure him. And Dobson, I think, could possibly come forward, get him in the cage and, you know, just take him down, rinse and repeat, wearing him. And so on and so forth. I don't think it should be a minus 200 favorite. Dobson's a lot better than this line is suggesting, so I'm taking a shot on the dog here.
And I don't fault you for that. I do agree that he is a much better fighter than expected, or than I've given him credit for anyway. But and don't forget, he looks like Jared Cannonier, so at least he has that going for him. Win or lose.
That's true. Kelly Thompson is asking, why does this badass of a pay-per-view have to fight so start so early? The reason being is because they have a Russian fighter on the main event. This is now going to be a prime time fight for the Russian fans in Russia. And that's mainly the fan base that they're trying to attract here. Because, you know, the guys in you know, us here in the States are going to watch regardless of the fact. But over there, they want a prime time. They're there, you know. And then also all the Russian fans, all the Muslims came out there. So they're doing it prime time in Abu Dhabi as well. So that's kind of the reason why they're doing it so early. And it sucks because, you know, you're spending pretty much, if you really want to watch this, your whole day is spent watching these fights. You're not going to be getting off your couch until like 6-7 o'clock at night from 10 in the morning. Cause this is an 8 to 9 hour fight card. Cause you got two title fights that could possibly go 25 minutes. That's 50 minutes just right there. And we got 13 fights in this fight card. And I'm looking forward to breaking down the rest. So let's keep it
going, my friend. Assalamu alaikum.
Sure. Let's keep it moving. All right. Next fight up in the welterweight division, we have a fight between Abubakar Nurmagomedov and Gatsi Omar Gatsiev. Right now, Nurmagomedov minus 165. The comeback on Omar Gatsiev plus 140. Who you got?
I don't even know how to
say so. Like, I think we do. I think we do some. We gotta do some mimosas, you know, a little bit of orange juice, a little bit of champagne, or we could do some screwdrivers, some vodka, and some orange juice. You know, some. Hey, you know what I like? I really do like an IPA with some orange juice. You know, that's really good too. I'm telling you, man.
We get some
of these cocktails early in us, and we'll have a really fucked up kind of day.
Yeah. Well, if I drink coffee for the entire event, I'll be shaking like I'm on a speed. So the main event's going to be really interesting for me.
as you're having heart palpitations.
Yeah, for real. For real. I've been there before. Yeah. Some of those main events I don't remember like you guys do. Because, yeah, I was in the back of an ambulance. But it is what it is. You know, DC still won. Nurmagomedov, I haven't said that in a long time. You know, he's 4 years older than Gatsi. And from what I remember, those 4 years will really show. Some of
Nurmagomedov.
Some of his losses are real head scratchers, too. I can only assume the public is betting him because of his name. You know, while Gatsi Omari, you know, he was a can crusher early in his career. He has some decent wins as of late. I'm ultimately just going to side with youth here. And I think he does enough to get his hand raised after 15 minutes. I think Gatsi gets the win via decision. I think the public and, you know, the Russians, they're siding with that last name, and you'll find out that he's not. I mean, he holds the name, but he doesn't hold it as high as, you know, his cousins.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Abubakar. I don't think he's. I don't think he's anywhere near as good as his cousins or brothers or whatever he is to Khabib. Omar Gatsiev, I'm not really impressed with him either, but he's coming down from 185. I think he was a little bit undersized there in terms of his strength. And we saw that in the Caio Bahio fight. He was just kind of getting taken down at will. I expect him to look a little bit better here at, I think, a more natural weight class of 170 pounds. He's pretty damn big for 170. I think he's like 6'2", if I'm not mistaken. And he's got a good ground game to match Nurmagomedov. And we've seen Nurmagomedov get tapped before via triangle, which was pathetic against a guy that's only a striker. So would I be surprised if Omar Gatsiev goes in there and catches him in a sub? Not really. That's why I'm kind of taking a shot on Omar Gatsiev at plus money, plus 140. I think that's a decent price. Money is coming in on him currently. So if you're looking to take a bet on him, it's probably now or never, pretty much.
Like it.
All right, moving on. We got a fight in the lightweight division between Lucas Almeida and Zubara Tukugov. Right now, Tukugov minus 165. The comeback on Almeida plus 140. Who do you got?
Yeah, see, now that you mentioned the Godsey and the sub, everyone's talking about it in the chat. That was my secret play of the day. Zubaria, you know, he just looks like a prick. So it's
he just looks. I'm gonna start off with this. My breakdown is gonna start off like this. This guy just looks like a prick.
He really does, man. I tried to find a picture of him not looking like a prick, and it just doesn't exist. You know, it's really hard to side with him, but I do think he does get. I think he gets it done. If he stays active, he should get the decision win. But if he doesn't, he'll lose. Remember the Duadu fight. This really comes down to me not thinking Almeida's wins are all that impressive. I mean, he knocked out Mike Trezano, but not until round three. Give me the other guy. I'm taking the prick winning by decision.
Yeah, man, I want to take Almeida as an underdog because he cashed as an underdog against Trezano. But that's Michael fucking Trezano. So, yeah, that was going to cash regardless of if he was a favorite or a dog. But Tukugov is a lot better than, you know, people giving him credit for. He's got power on his feet, and he's definitely way better on the mat than Almeida. Almeida is definitely dangerous on the feet. He's got power. He mixes things up very well, head to body, especially with his kicks. And he's definitely dangerous if you get caught in a scramble. He's got a good guillotine, but I think Tukugov is way more advanced on the mat than Almeida. He's faced far better competition, far better strikers. I'm going to take Tukugov to get back into the win. No, not back. I think he won his last fight against Ricardo Ramos, if I'm not mistaken. He's coming off about a year's layoff. That's pretty much what he does. He fights like once a year. I think he rolls here, gets another dub, and keeps it moving. All right. He looks like a prick. Moving on, we got a fight in the light heavyweight division between Nikita Krylov and Volkan Uzdemir. Right now, Krylov minus 175. The comeback on Uzdemir plus 150. Who do you got?
Not a huge fan of Krylov.
Me either.
He isn't entertaining. Nope. He hasn't really beat anyone. You know, does he brag to his wife about Johnny Walker? He's just kind of meh, middle of the road. You know, Volkan, at least, you know, he says no time. Like, that's cool. And he points at his wrist. Yeah, I mean, that's so legit. Like, that's like, can you imagine like Kevin Durant saying no time? Like, that, like that's just sick, you know? Or he like what's it called? The Dexter, you know, he like kills someone, he's like, no time. Like, you just know it's legit. But anyway, back to the fight. You know, he's slowed his step a little bit as of late. You know, I think him not getting subbed by Paul Craig is a win within itself. So because of which, I'd like to think maybe he has a few decent fights left in him. I mean, he did go to a split decision with Rokic, and he looked decent against Jiří, you know, before he died. But I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I'm gonna take Ozdemir via decision. I just feel like he can avoid like what little Krylov throws at him, and then just maybe kind of pull like a fast one, kind of like he did against Craig, and get the decision win.
Yeah, it just Krylov is just somebody that I just keep putting my money on. Even the last fight against Gustafsson, which was fairly one of the easiest fights he'll ever have. It's just his fight IQ is just pretty fucking terrible. Like, this is a fight where he probably should go in and try to get a takedown, which won't really work that well, considering Uzdemir actually has pretty good takedown defense. He showed it in his last fight against Paul Craig. So then he's going to have to stand and bang with Uzdemir and give him the fight that he wants. Just stand and train in the center, because Krylov is not going to be, you know, just sticking and moving. That's not his game. He doesn't have great movement. He does get hit. and they were going to give Uzmir enough chances to get a knockout. And I'm taking Uzmir at plus money. I just can't fathom taking Krylov as a favorite against anybody, really. I don't care who he's facing. It's not happening. That fight IQ is so bad that I can never bet him at minus 175, minus 185, even minus all the way, minus 196. No, thank you.
And then at the end, he'll go, no time.
No time. No
time. It's so sick. Like, it's so sick. No time.
All right, moving on. We got a fight in the middleweight division between Kyle Bahio and Mahmoud Miradov. Right now, Bahio minus 205. The comeback on Miradov plus 175. What do you got?
Yeah, it looks like some money's coming in on Muradov. I like the way you say Kyle Bahio. Can you say it one more time for me?
Kyle Bahio.
Oh, man, I just peed a little. You know, Kyle Bahio, it doesn't sound as cool when I say it because I'm like so white. Like, it's just like,
bro, look at me. Yeah, I know.
But, like, that's Canadian white. You're like island white. Kyle Bahio, you know, he subs people, or at least he tries to. And Mahmoud Almerdarov, you know, he gets subbed. Kyle will be smaller in this one. But I'd argue, and I will argue, and I will die on this hill, that the UFC is throwing him an aging fighter in hopes to secure a win and build his resume. I feel like Kyle should roll here. I'm liking that the money's coming in on his opposition, because I will gladly take a better line for Kyle. Bahio. Yeah. Thank you. No time.
I've come around to really like Bahio, and he's won me some money recently. The only fight that I really lost on him when I took him against Aaron Jeffrey, which was pretty much a stalemate. I think both of them just couldn't really do much against one another. But since then, he's looked great. He's controlled his opponents on the mat. Once he gets it down there and takes your back, you're stuck. There's no way you're getting up. And his ground game is definitely levels better than Miradov, because Miradov got taken down and subbed by Jeremy Mirshar, who I think is less of a grappler than Bahio. I'm almost certain Bahio is a black belt. He's been training with Damian Maia since he was 19 years old. So, you know, he's getting in the best BJJ you could possibly get over in Brazil.
I don't know. There, you can get some good BJJ over in Brazil, if you know what I'm saying. Kyle Bahio.
possibly. But yeah, I mean, Miradov, don't get me wrong, dude's tough. He's got knockout power. I definitely think he's gonna have the advantage in the striking department. So it's gonna come down to Bahio being smart, using his distance, because he does very well at keeping his distance, using his kicks, using his reach. He's got that long karate type of stance. He's got really good in and out movement. My only worry is he tends to slow down as the fight goes on, especially when he goes, you know, grapple heavy early on, like he did in his last fight. But ultimately, I do expect him to land some takedowns, get some ground control, and get a decision win. I don't think he gets the sub. I think he just is able to coast here, get some ground control. I think he gets a little bit dicey on the feet, just a little bit. He's going to get hit. But I think ultimately he's able to control him on the mat and get the sub. And get the win via decision. I like Bahio. I think his ceiling is a lot higher than Muradov. And I kind of just want to see him face some ranked opposition after this.
Agreed.
All right. Next up, we got a fight between Sean Brady and Bilal Muhammad in the 170-pound division. We have Forrest Daniels saying he packed a fat bowl of the devil's lettuce for the main card breakdown. We're almost there, buddy. We're almost there. We're one fight away before we get to the main card breakdown.
I also noticed that Forrest is not, he's watching on YouTube and Facebook.
Man.
True fan.
He is. Thank you. We appreciate you. All right. You have fun with that devil's lettuce. All right. Moving on. Right now, the line minus 140 on Sean Brady, the undefeated 15-0 Sean Brady, and the comeback on Bilal Muhammad. Remember the name Muhammad plus 120. Who do you got?
Praise Allah. You know, outside of the key mashups, I think that this is probably my favorite fight on the card. Yeah. I don't typically say that about Bilal Muhammad fights unless I have money on him. And I will have money on him this time.
You're damn right. Yeah, damn right. Just like last week. The last time we fought against Vicente Luque, we cashed big time on that one.
Big boy money. You know, Brady, he has all of the stylings to be the next big thing, but is Bilal here to halt the hype train? I think so. I think Brady, he can do it all, no doubt. But Bilal is so awkward, and he knows how to avoid anything you bring to the table. I'd assume we see a similar fight to the Luque fight. Brady never really gets going, and Bilal fights off of his heel. It should be interesting. I like Bilal Muhammad via decision. And I'm also, like, I know that that sounds crazy just because of how hyped Brady is, but y'all said the same thing about the Luque fight. You said we were out of our minds picking Bilal over Luque. I think it's going to be a very similar fight.
Oh, look, we got somebody over in Abu Dhabi watching this podcast at 3:34 local time. Well, we appreciate you, Maddie Nice. We appreciate you. Have some fun. Enjoy the fights. Man, I'm sure you're having the time of your life over there. I'm super jealous. So have fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm sure you are as well.
He has a Trump avatar too, so you know he's cool.
Definitely. All right. When it comes to this fight, I love Bilal Muhammad's abilities. He's arguably one of the smartest fighters in there. He's got great fight IQ. He's got great cardio. He's a good wrestler. He's a good striker. Do I think Sean Brady's a little bit better than him in some of these aspects? Yeah, I do. But at the end of the day, it's going to be hard for Brady to come in there and beat Muhammad because he just fights smart. He's able to stay out of range. He's able to pop you with his jab while you're coming forward. He's utilizing his side-to-side movements just like he did against Vicente Luque. He defended the takedowns against Luque, defended the dark choke. He was able to mix in takedowns whenever Luque was overextending on his punches, just like Brady's going to, because he's going to be flustered, not being able to hit him. It's going to be very, very reminiscent of that fight. And I wasn't impressed with Sean Brady when he fought Michael Chiesa. I was not at all. So that's what's leading me towards Bilal. Bilal's on an 8-fight win streak. He's fought and beaten the far better competition that Brady has ever faced. And this is a pretty big step up in competition. Granted, I know Chiesa is ranked, but he's a lightweight. And Chiesa really has only beaten Neil Magny in his run at 170, in his time at 170 pounds. So I'm taking Bilal Muhammad to stop the hype train of Sean Brady, cash in on us for another dog money. And let's keep it trucking, because I love cashing bets on Bilal Muhammad at plus money. My comment won't get shown because I'm right. Brady beats Bilal. Okay, let's go back. Okay, we got four saying Sean Brady beats Bilal by second round submission. Khabib can't fight for Bilal. I have money on Brady. Let's keep it going.
All right, Mike. We got it. We got it.
Yeah, but anyways, as far as this fight goes, also, you're saying that Khabib can't fight for him, right? But Bilal has a 91% takedown defense, and only training with Khabib and all those monsters in Dagestan has only gotten him so much better in those regards. Yeah. I think it's going to be very hard for Brady to impose his will, get the takedown, and just do what he pleases on top like he does everybody else. This is going to be a rude awakening for him. He's coming into hostile territory as well. He's never had to deal with the crowd that he's going to have to deal with as well. So I'm siding with Bilal. I think Bilal's going to rise to the occasion here, and he's going to win for his fans over in Abu Dhabi.
I also don't know if it's just me, but Brady seemed kind of like shook a little bit at the presser.
Oh, he definitely was. No, absolutely. He, like I said, he's never had to deal with the animosity that he's had to deal with. No one's really come in there and said, fuck Philly, fuck you, and fuck everything that you're about. So now he's got that animosity, like, oh, I fucking hate this guy. And now on top of that, he's going to have to deal with everybody else not liking him too. Because over here, everybody's a Brady fan because he's super exciting. He's a great prospect. He finishes opponents. And he's not really a big shit talker either. But now he's going across the world and he's got to deal with people that don't like him. No one's rooting for him. He's hating the guy he's facing against as well. This is the first time that he's literally got some type of animosity towards his opponent. Like, this is the first time he's got some shit talk. And this is the first time that he's actually got some spotlight, you know, in the media. He never had to do the big media days. He didn't have to do the whole, press conference.
Yeah, limelight.
Yeah, he's never had that. And I feel like the pressure is going to break him. Blah's been here before. He's been at the main event. He's had all this hype surrounding his fights before. Brady hasn't. So we'll see if he rises to the occasion. But I'm siding with Bilal Muhammad here.
Hey, yeah. And also, too, like, I don't want anyone to think we don't think Brady is good, because obviously he's good.
Right. I mean, he's very good. I mean, he's 15-0 for a reason. He's ranked number 8th in the world in the welterweight division. I mean, arguably, he could probably be majority of the top 5, but I just feel like this is a bad matchup. I really do.
And also, too, like, really it comes down to, like, almost like a coin flip. It just depends on who shows up and who sticks to the game plan. And in that type of mindset, why wouldn't you take the underdog? I think that that's what, some people might be missing out on as far as what we are saying. Like, it might benefit to take the dog based on just those two aspects alone.
And also, you know where you're getting for Bilal. He fights smart. He stays at range. He doesn't get hit. He doesn't get hurt. He doesn't get subbed. I mean, and he's fought the better competition. There's a lot more question marks surrounding Brady, because you're betting on him as a favorite. He hasn't fought great competition. He hasn't fought anybody on the level of Bilal. He hasn't fought in hostile territory. I mean, there's all these question marks surrounding him, where Bilal is just going out there and just has to do his thing and just be on his P's and Q's. Where I like, yes, he's got pressure on him, but I feel like there's a lot less pressure than Brady does.
Moving on.
We talked much about that. All right. First fight up on the main card, I believe. This is the first fight on the main card, is it not? Yes. First fight on the main card is a fight in the women's flyweight division between Manon Ferreiro and Caitlin Chookagian. Right now, Ferreiro -205 to come back on Chookagian +175. Who do you got? Yes, Forrest. I know he's never lost, but he's faced literally nobody. He's only 4-5-0 in the UFC, and his best win is Michael Chiesa, who's a former lightweight. Anyways,
just for the record, I picked Malcolm by decision last week. So anyway, but here's another decision, and here's another underdog that I am picking. You know, Ferreiro she's decent enough, and she's looked decent enough, but I think that this is a pretty big step up for her. She hasn't really fought anyone like Chookagian. And if Chookagian, I swear I can speak. Chookagian sticks to her typical game plan. This has decision written all over it. The Maya win is a feather in the cap of Ferreiro, but I imagine that Chookagian yells and kicks at range just like she always does, and then ultimately gets her arm raised after a 15-minute snooze fest. I like Caitlin Chookagian. Hell, I liked her at +160. I will gladly take her at +175, and then I will also double dip and take her by decision. I like Caitlin Chookagian at decision, and I just feel like she's just going to fight at range. Ferreiro is looking like the mom from fucking Mean Girls in her little Gucci suit, looking too good for the press. I mean, you got to win, girl. Win, and then you can dress like that.
Yeah, man, I like Ferreiro. I've cashed on her numerous times. Like you said, definitely a step up in competition. I don't think she should be a -205 favorite, considering she's beaten nobody. She couldn't even finish Jennifer Maya. So at that point, going in, this fight is going the distance, right?
Yep.
So at that point, do you think she's -205 going the distance? Do you think she's going to win all three rounds, like, handily? I don't. I think it's going to be a competitive fight. I feel like it should be back and forth. I don't think Ferreiro is getting the knockout. I don't think she has Andrade power in order to get that knockout over Chookagian. So I think it's going to be a back and forth, very close battle. And I'd rather, if I were to bet on this fight, which I'm obviously not, I would probably take the side on the dog here, +175 all the way up to +190, because she's been there, she's done that, she's faced the best. Meanwhile, we're still waiting to see if Ferreiro is the real deal. I mean, if she gets this win, she's a real deal. She probably gets a title shot after this, but we will see. I'd rather wait and see than bet on her at minus 205 here.
Yeah, that's also the thing. If we know this is probably going decision, it's a coin flip. You know, who screams the loudest? It's Chookagian. I'm gonna take that all damn day.
All damn day. All right, let's keep it moving. Our next fight up is in the lightweight division between Beneil Dariush and Mateusz Gamrot. Right now, Gamrot minus 190 to come back, and Dariush plus 160. Who do you got?
Wow. Okay. So this is actually, believe it or not, a lot like the last fight. I think that this is a very, very, very tight matchup. Both guys have fought a lot of the same guys with similar results. This one will probably go to decision as well, and I'm totally okay with taking the stab on Beneil at plus 175, as I assume a few of the rounds are going to be difficult to score. Beneil is a bit more seasoned, and I think he can steal a split a lot like Garam did against Gamrot nearly 2 years ago. I feel like we're going to see almost that exact same fight play out, and I like Beneil Dariush. I like him at plus money. I like him at decision. I like it all. I like the dogs will be barking on Saturday, and I am going to be enjoying it as I count my money with my coffee.
Yep, I agree with that as well. I think Dariush is definitely being completely underestimated here. He's top five for a reason. He's fought the who's who. He's beaten the who's who. Gamrot's best win was Tsarukyan, and he barely won that fight. I think Dariush,
he didn't.
Right, exactly. I mean, granted, I bet Gamrot by decision at plus 500, but
and we met him live.
Neither here nor there, but I do think he has such a high ceiling. But, you know, Dariush, like, this is a pretty massive step up in competition for him. Maybe he goes out there and shows us he's the next guy up, the next guy that should be fighting for a title. But until he shows me that, I'm taking Dariush at plus 160. I feel like that's a no-brainer. I mean, you're talking about a guy that should be fighting for a title, but is not. And he's still only 32 years old, and he's still got a lot left. He's a great grappler. He's got power in his hands. We've seen that in the Jakar close fight. Yeah.
Which is a pretty good win, honestly. Looking back, that's a pretty solid fucking win.
Benny looking old. I mean, he's only looking old because of his hair. He's not actually looking old, though. I mean, he's still in great shape. He's 32 years old. What does that make me? I'm freaking 32 as well. And no, hey, we're not disrespecting Gamrot, also wearing flip-flops.
He's walking around in flip-flops because he's in the gym all day. Like, his bones are tired because he's always working out.
Seriously. I mean, we're not disrespecting Gamrot because I've been on Gamrot. I'm pretty sure every single fight that he's had in his entire UFC career. So I am definitely not disrespecting him. I just think the line is absolutely disrespecting Dariush. Yes. I mean, who has Gamrot beat?
It's kind of like the Brady fight. I mean, a lot of these are really coin flips. It's really going to come down to what the judges favor.
Right. I mean, like, and I just don't see how you don't take plus money, almost plus 200 on a guy that's been there, done that in the top five, fought elite competition, beat elite competition, been here forever, and then you were going to give a guy that's beaten Tsarukyan by split decision that was close, that he arguably lost in a fight where they were just wrestle-fucking each other. They were just scrambling on the mat. There was not a ton of striking. Because in the striking exchanges, I give it to Dariush all day.
Yeah,
Dariush is definitely the better striker of the two. So it's going to come down to Dariush, you know, reversing position, defending the takedowns. Gamrot will get tired if he tends to go for takedowns and not land them. And then Dariush keep getting back to his feet. Dariush is definitely the better striker of the two. So I'm taking a shot here on the dog. I mean, it's not about disrespect. I think Gamrot's elite, but I just think we're disrespecting Dariush at plus 160, plus 170 on the betting lines. I think that's insane.
Yeah, and also,
he's 32.
Some of his wins, like some of the, if the, like they fought some of the same guys, Dariush looked more impressive against those guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's an argument to be had there too. He should be fighting for a belt, and he's fighting a step down in competition to kind of prove his worth. So, I don't know. Makes sense to me to bet the underdog here just based on that alone.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, this is one of those fights where you bet the underdog in the spot because he's been there, he's done that, he's got the experience. Yes, you have the up-and-coming prospect that's looking hungry, looking the best he's ever, but could it
be... How old is Gamrot?
I think he's like 30 or 28 or something like that.
I feel like he's pretty old too. Or like, I mean, he's like in his 30s too.
I think so. Yeah, he's 31. It's not like he's like some spring chicken.
Literally 1 year, like, or yeah, 1 year apart. Like, give me a break. Like
two years, but I mean, it's not much. I mean, and granted, I mean, he's literally other than Sarukian beating nobody. Diego Ferreira, Jeremy Stephen, Scott Holtzman lost a split decision to Gurram Kutadalatse.
Yeah,
I mean, how are you losing a split to Gurram Kutadalatse? I know Kutadalatse is good, but you don't lose a split to him and then jump from Armin Sarukian to Benil Dariush. Sarukian was fringe top 15. Now you're taking the guy that fought and beaten the who's who, who's inside the top five, who's on a nasty win streak. He's on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 fight win streak.
Wasn't that his debut? The split?
Yeah, the Kutadalatse fight.
That fight was incredible. That was a great fight.
That really was. I like Kutadalatse, though.
So. Yeah, me too. All right, moving on.
Moving on. Let's keep it moving. We are up to our featured bout on the main card in the bantamweight division between Piotr Jan and Sean O'Malley. Right now, Jan minus 265. The comeback on O'Malley plus 225. What do you got?
Jan is minus 265.
Yeah, he definitely should be at least minus 500 in this spot.
Holy shit. Yeah, yesterday he was minus 310, so that's wild.
Money's coming in on Sean O'Malley, and I'm quite flabbergasted as to why.
I mean, O'Malley, he has a chance. He has a puncher's chance, but I just don't see what other people are seeing. You know, his only chance is a first-round knockout. You know, the story is, and I know you're going to give me some stats here, Jan is a notoriously slow starter. So if O'Malley somehow manages to knock out Jan, or if he, you know, let's say he wins round one, round two or round three, potentially could win a decision. But I just don't see that happening. That being said, I think Jan is the better fighter. He should win. I'm having a hard time, you know, seeing O'Malley get his hand raised like against Piotr Jan. Like it doesn't make any sense to me. The fact that this fight was even announced and is a real thing. So here's something to think about. All right. When this fight was leaked, or whenever they first announced it, people didn't believe that it was real, because considering the fights that O'Malley has fought, and then he all of a sudden gets this Piotr Jan fight. That's a lot to think about. And then now you said minus 265. Like you said, it blows my mind that this is not a minus 500. I am literally going to put all of my money, my entire bankroll, on Piotr Jan if it gets crazier. Like minus 265 is nutso. You know, minus 225, that's Joker level crazy. So anyway, Piotr Jan wins via decision.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not understanding this whole matchup to begin with. I guess Jan just wants an easy dub, easy paycheck. That's why he's going in here and taking on the Sean O'Malley character over here. I just don't know what O'Malley's going to do in the sense he's gonna throw flying shit. He's gonna throw spinning shit. But what happens when you miss, you get countered, especially against an elite counter striker in Piotr Jan. And the whole, you know, slow starter narrative.
Yep.
Well, if we want to get into some statistics here, because
this blew my mind.
Because I like to look into these things. The reason why this man is a quote unquote slow starter is because he's fighting five round fucking fights, people. Five round fights. What do you have to do to win five round fights? Pace yourself. Fucking pace yourself. You have to fight 25 minutes against another human being to the death, and you have to not gas out. Do you know how hard it is to not gas out in 5 minutes, let alone 25 minutes? That's why he's a slow starter, as they say. But in three-round fights, let's just look at the statistics here. Yan is throwing, on average, 48.5 strikes, landing 48% of those strikes, and throwing 10.29 strikes per minute in the first round. So the whole narrative about this man being a slow starter is fucking bullshit. And that's the only thing that people are hanging their hats on, betting on O'Malley. But what about O'Malley? He doesn't have the volume either. Yes, he has a volume against human punching bags, but against the only two fighters that he's fought, he had low volume. Why? Because they're pressuring him. He's not good when he's the one getting pressured backwards. He's not the one. He's not as good throwing volume when he has to be on his toes and on his heels the entire fight. And that's what Yan does. He comes forward. He's pressuring you straight back. He's going to mix it up from the legs to the body to the head, mixing some takedowns. This is the biggest step up in competition that I've actually ever seen. I mean, he's going from Pedro Munhoz, who wasn't ranked, I don't believe at the time, and losing round one to Pedro Munhoz, who was just calf kicking him for 5 minutes. He lost that round on every scorecard and only threw 26 strikes, might I add. And
he was
then
just getting started, man. He was just getting started.
Just getting started. And then the other fight that only matters, he gets finished in round one by Chito Vera. There's only two fights that we should even care about, because just throw the rest out of there, because they were all bums that he's faced. None of those guys are in the UFC anymore. There's only two guys that he's faced that are still in the UFC. He got waxed by one, and he eye-poked the other one that he was losing a fight to. So here we are. He's going up against the number one fighter in the division, and we're going to bet him when he's not proving shit to us because he's an underdog, and then Yan is a slow starter. Good luck. Have fun. I'll be cashing in on Piotr Jan while everybody's just, you know, thinking about what O'Malley is going to be in the future and all this and that. I really don't care. He's not on Yan's level. He won't be right now, maybe in a few years, possibly, but not right now. He's nowhere near the level that Yan is. And they're saying the height, the reach, the this, the that. But what about the Corey Sandhagen fight, who is a far better version of O'Malley? And he was able to land 55% of his strikes against him. He landed almost 200 strikes against Corey Sandhagen. And you're trying to tell me he can't land the same amount against John O'Malley? Why? Why? So I'm taking Piotr Jan in this fight.
Has O'Malley won via head kick?
Yeah, I think he has. Yeah.
It was
some bum. I don't know.
I was gonna say, I hate to put you on the spot, but if I remember correctly, most of his wins come via like left or right. Like
no, like, I think he had one high kick knockout. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. But I mean, either way, I mean, yes, Yan gets hit, but has he ever been knocked out?
Yeah, I don't even think he's been hurt. Like, I mean, the closest he's been hurt was against Aldo.
He went to war with Jose Aldo fucking, not just to war. This man was standing in the fucking phone booth with Jose Aldo and fighting to the nail. Like, O'Malley would never take a full shot from Jose Aldo. Like Yang did. I mean, these two were literally face to face, right in front of each other. They were not moving. They were going toe to toe and just throwing down. Sean O'Malley would never, ever be able to do that in his entire lifetime against anybody. But as far as like the head kick, yeah, he had a head kick against Jose Alberto Quinones.
Oh, I remember that fight. Yeah. The reason I ask is because Matty Nice says that Yan leaves his chin exposed at the end of his strikes. Look for the head kick.
I mean, he's not wrong there. I mean, yeah. Like, Yan definitely, come on.
But then he follows up with Yan by decision. And I'm like, okay, well, thanks for pointing it out. But yeah, I think you're on the same page as us. Like, I think that, you know, your boy O'Malley, I think he's interesting. But there's just levels to this.
Yes. Yan's going to show that there's levels to this. I mean, what I really want to see, I want to see Yan mix it up. I want to see Yan take him down, because we have yet to see anybody even attempt to take down against him. So it'll be interesting to see someone actually attempt to take down against O'Malley. So we'll see how that goes. And Forrest is asking, what's the odds on this right now?
-265.
Yeah, -265 on Yan and +225 on O'Malley. Money's still coming in on O'Malley, and it's, like I said, quite flabbergasted, but let's keep it moving. Right now, we're up to our co-main event of the evening in the Bantamweight division for the Bantamweight Championship of the World. We have Aljamain Sterling taking on TJ Dillashaw. Right now, Sterling -175. The comeback on Dillashaw +150. Who do you got?
Yeah. That was fun. It's no secret how much I dislike Sterling, and but this fight right here, this is his fight to lose. Dillashaw is old. He's aging. He's no longer on the roids. We don't have, you know, the Dilla snake, you know, anymore. Ultimately, I think TJ can withstand the barrage of takedowns. Excuse me, a glitch in the matrix. I don't think TJ can withstand the barrage of takedowns that will be coming his way. When Aljo isn't wrestling, I'd be willing to bet he point fights at range. Don't get me wrong. I think TJ will have moments, but they'll be few and far between. And ultimately, I feel like Sterling will win via decision. I think it'll be clear cut, unanimous decision. I don't think TJ Dillashaw is... I just don't think he's like at that level anymore. I think the TJ that we all know and love, I think that we saw him, his last appearance was in that Corey Sandhagen fight. If we ever got that fight again, which I would love to see that again, I think it goes down a completely different way. And yeah, Aljo wins via decision here.
Yeah, definitely on Aljamain Sterling. I'm not seeing the love for TJ Dillashaw. He looked bad in his first fight back off the PEDs. He's now over a year layoff due to having reconstructive PCL and meniscus surgery at age 36 years old. And he's stepping up against the best fighter in the division after his surgery in his first fight back. Sterling is definitely in the best shape of his life. Sterling is in his prime. Sterling has the cardio to go 25 minutes. Sterling looked great against Jan. Sterling looked a lot better on the feet than the first fight. He was actually competitive against Jan. Jan wasn't just watching him on the feet. He was very competitive. He's long. He's lanky. He uses those limbs very well. He's got a good high kick, good jab. And I feel Dillashaw is going to have some trouble with that range. And when he finally gets in range, you know, Sterling's definitely going to mix it up with the takedowns. And you have Dillashaw thinking he's going to go in there and try to beat Sterling in his own game. That's just a bad recipe for a disaster, because you're giving Sterling the chance to sweep you, get your back. And when he gets your back, you're stuck there forever. He's not getting off. He's got one of the best back take in the entire division. And I'm rolling with Sterling here. I'm fairly confident in his ability to get the job done. And I just don't see how people could go and bet. I know he's a dog, and I get it, and people don't like Sterling, and they think he's a fake champion and think he's not that good, but he's really damn good. I'm sorry, guys, but he's really fucking good. He's in his prime right now, where Dillashaw is way out of his prime, and I'm expecting a dominant decision from Sterling and showing that why he is the best bantamweight in the division right now.
He's like one of the only fighters that got like a really like a lot better with the belt. Like, he didn't really deserve the belt when he got it,
right?
But he
transformed. Really... Bro, he transformed after that. It was crazy. Yeah. He got the surgery, and maybe the surgery is what like helped him, you know, get over that hump, because maybe that was what was kind of hindering him in that first fight, because he was a brand new fighter in that second fight. He was in better shape than he's ever been. He looked crisper on the feet. His wrestling was phenomenal. And you're talking about a guy that attempted almost 40 takedowns in his last two fights. And you're talking about Dillashaw off a reconstructive PCL and meniscus has to defend 20 takedowns in 25 minutes. Good fucking luck. Especially on top of it, Dillashaw hasn't had to defend a takedown in years. We're talking 4 to 5 years. He has not had to defend one single takedown, and here we are. He's gonna have to defend 20, probably, if not more, throughout this course of this fight. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that that movie Rookie of the Year when the guy gets like he plays baseball, he gets like surgery on his arm or gets a cast, and then right. by the end of the movie he joins the Yankees or the Rangers or something, and he could pitch really fast. Also, you know, mentioning the leg, I believe it was after round one or round two, TJ Dillashaw hurt his leg after whenever he was fighting Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah, it was the first round.
Yeah, so I feel like something like that is going to happen here again.
He's breaking, bro. Like, we're talking about a guy that had 3 to 4 surgeries in the last 3 to 4 years. He had both surgeries on his shoulders and now reconstructive surgery on his PCL and meniscus.
He kind of looked odd, too, like at the presser. Like, you know how, like, sometimes whenever people, like, women wear, like, those button-down blouses and their, like, chests are, like, really, like, muscular? He had like an old woman chest, which I mean, I'm a big boy, you know. I could talk about chests all damn day, but for a guy like TJ Dillashaw to like have one of those like weird inverted like old women chest, it's like it's strange to see. So on that note,
we're going live. We're finally up to the main event that everybody's been waiting for. That's what I've been waiting for. I'm super stoked for this fight. Up next, lightweight title on the line between Charles Oliveira and Islam Makhachev. Right now, Makhachev minus 175 all the way up to minus 245 at some places. And the comeback on Charles plus 140 all the way up to plus 185. What do you got?
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, I get it. Like, I'm surprised to see these odds, like where they are or where they were earlier in the week. You know, Oliveira hasn't really beat anyone like Islam during his rise at the top. And I do think he is a solid fighter, but Islam is the kryptonite to the olive man. I'd assume Islam, you know, wants to make a statement. And so because of which, I'm going to assume that Islam wrestles his heart out and eventually wins via ground and pound. Again, I like both fighters, but there is no way Islam is winning this. I mean, excuse me, Islam is losing this. And praise Allah, Islam Makhachev via KO.
Yeah, obviously everybody knows where I reside in terms
you've been saying it for years.
I've been saying it since the day Charles Oliveira got the belt. Islam is the one to beat him. I've said it and I'm saying it again. This is a terrible stylistic matchup for Oliveira. I think Oliveira is a great fighter, and he mops the floor probably every single other fighter in the division not named Islam Makhachev. I think that's going to be his kryptonite. We've seen Oliveira have bad takedown defense. He doesn't have great takedown defense. And the thing is with Makhachev, he's got decent stand-up. It's not like he can't stand and strike. So, you know, Oliveira's going to be worried about takedowns here, worried about takedowns there. Islam's going to do what he wants to do. I mean, like, Oliveira's, all he's worried about is, you know, defending takedowns. That's all he's been doing throughout camp, is worrying about defending takedowns. Don't worry, he won't ever be able to defend the takedowns, but he's going to be thinking about it the entire time, where it's going to open up Makhachev's striking. He's going to be able to show some of his striking abilities. He's actually very good at defense. No one hits him. Less than one strike absorbed per minute. And no one has landed more than 20 strikes against him in a single fight. No one. That's unheard of. This guy's on a 10-fight win streak. I know people are saying he's the wish version of Khabib, but honestly, I think it's the better version of Khabib. Why? Because he has striking abilities. He's way more technical. He's more efficient than Khabib will ever be. And then now he's going against a guy that has bad takedown defense, against a guy that hasn't had to defend a takedown in years. He hasn't had to defend a takedown since Kevin Lee back in 2018. And Lee went 2 for 3 on takedowns. I don't think miraculously he's going to be this great D1 wrestler that he's going to be able to defend takedowns from someone like Islam Makhachev, who takes down anybody and everybody, whoever he faces, any which way possible. Yes, I know Charles' resume is more impressive. I get it. He's only more impressive in his last three fights. Take away his last three fights. Their resume is fucking identical. They both fought bums on their rise to stardom. Both of them. And get this. If Khabib was a champion, Charles Oliveira wouldn't have gotten the title shot.
Yeah, that's true.
He wouldn't have gotten the title shot because I guarantee you either Justin Gaethje or Dustin Poirier or Michael Chandler, one of those guys would have gotten the title shot to face Khabib over Charles Oliveira. It's just what that's the way it was going to happen. But since Khabib retired, they threw Oliveira against Chandler, and Chandler almost waxed his ass in round one. Granted, I know he came back and he won, yada, yada, yada. He's fought through adversity. He's gotten better. He is legit. I just think this is a terrible matchup for him. And like I said, I will bet Oliveira against literally anybody else in this division except for Islam. I think this is just a bad stylistic matchup. I think Makhachev can compete with him on the feet, and we know damn well that wrestling and the top pressure and the top control of Makhachev will stifle any type of attacks from submissions off his back from Oliveira. We've seen it in the past, and we know that Makhachev has got great cardio. He's not Kevin Lee, where Kevin Lee gasses out after 5 minutes of wrestling. So he could do this for fucking two 25-minute fights. So I'm not even worried about that. I think he's going to stifle any type of attacks off the back. He's going to be heavy on top, be methodical, be technical, and rinse to repeat. Get the win, probably finish him inside three rounds. I'm sorry, Oliveira backers. I'm sorry, everybody that loves him. But get this, 70% of you guys are on Oliveira, and the money is still going away from him. How does that work out? You have a guy that 70% of the public and 60% of the handle is on you as an underdog. You never want to bet on a public underdog. Never. It never works out. The book wants you to bet Oliveira. Why? He's a champion. He's the guy that's won over 10 fights in a row. He's beaten the best of the best in the division. Makhachev has beaten absolutely nobody. He doesn't deserve this. He's the wish version of Khabib. He's all this and that, and he's still a plus 160 all the way up to plus 185 underdog, and you're all betting him. Think about that. Why? Why is he such a big underdog and you're all betting on him? That doesn't make sense, does it? No. So think about it. Islam Makhachev gets the job done. He's going to be new, and we'll never see him at minus 190, minus 180, yeah, minus 175. Ever again. So get your monies in now before it's all gone, because he's gonna be -300, -400, -600, moving on every day after this. So cash in now while it's too late. So let's look what we got here. We got Forrest Daniels saying Vegas wants your Islam money. In my opinion, that is definitely not true. Why would the book want my Islam money when all the money is already on Charles Oliveira? How does that work?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about 60% of the handle and 69% of the vets are on Oliveira, and the money is moving the opposite way. That's called reverse line movement. And that's something that you don't want to be on that side of. And no, I'm not talking about you, Forrest. I'm talking about Matty Ice. I'm not saying it's a lock. It's not a lock. This fight is not a lock. I'm confident in his abilities. This is not a lock. Okay.
I think it's a lock. I put 5 units on him. I feel like this is like Khabib and Edson Barboza all over again. We're never going to get this type of line. I mean, even if, let's say, he loses a decision, we're never going to see this line again on this guy. It'll be minus 500, minus 600 after this.
Maybe. Especially if he goes in there and finishing like I'm expecting him to do.
Yeah. I just feel like it's going to be shades of that fight. I mean, after Barboza, like, no one doubted Khabib ever again. I mean, we have Aliquinta, Connor. I mean, you know, that was kind of both sides. But, everyone thought he was going to beat Dustin. Everyone thought he was going to dust Gaethje. I mean,
well, we have Matty Ice. I like Matty Ice better. Saying that's what Vegas wants you to think. I feel both of you think this is the safest bet. Vegas dream. Vegas loves you feeling safe. I bet it's both your biggest wager. No. Yes. Yes, it is. Because I've been waiting for this fight. I've been breaking down this fight for a few years now. And I think it's time for Islam to get his belt. I'm sorry, but like Maddie, everybody's thinking like you. Everybody's thinking like you. There is very far and few between that people are thinking like me and Jesse over here. There is. 70% of the people are thinking just like you. There's more people that like Oliveira than they do Islam. Let's be real. Yes, Islam's got a ton of Russian fan base and all that, but everyone in the US wants Oliveira. Everyone in Brazil wants Oliveira. Everybody like in South and Central America wants Oliveira. Everybody in Northern America wants Oliveira. Everybody wants Oliveira to win. And everybody's betting him. They're like, fuck, shit. You know, it little risk for a lot reward at plus 160 all the way up to probably plus 200. That's what everybody's thinking is. I can bet a little to win a lot on Charles Oliveira. And he's the champion. Look what he's done. Look who he's beaten. Islam's beaten nobody. But the line is going the opposite way. If the money was going the right way, Charles would be the favorite. Given the bets and the handle, Oliveira should be the favorite here. At least a minus 140, minus 160 favorite. And look at him. He's almost a 2-to-1 dog. It's weird, don't you think? And Vegas, if Vegas really wants me to place bets on Islam, that doesn't make sense. If 70% of the public, if like seven times the people are on Oliveira at plus money, why would they want me to bet Islam? They want you to keep betting Oliveira. So once Islam hits, they rake in all that money on the Oliveira bettors.
He also asked, do we think it's the safest bet? I wouldn't say it's exactly the safest bet. I just do think that it's going to be like one of those bets we look back on and it's like, holy shit, I can't believe we actually got that line. I feel like the safer bet is Peter Yan and maybe even Aljo Sterling.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they got much more favorable matches, but I'm at a point where, you know, all my eggs are in this basket, the Islam basket, and I'm going to stay true to my word. I'm going to go down on my shield if Islam goes out there and gets starched. Would I be surprised? No, because Oliveira is a great competitor. I mean, he like I said, he's the one B to my thinking is the one A of Islam. Because, like I said, Oliveira beats every single other person in this division, named Islam. I think just the bad stylistic matchup. If Islam wasn't like, I would bet a shit ton on Khabib over Oliveira as well. I mean, it's just the styles make the matchups where I think Islam style beats BJJ all day. And which is true. You know, Makhachev's never been submitted. He has got great grapplers, great jiu-jitsu guys in his camp. He's ready for a guy that's just going to throw up triangles and guillotines and arm bars off his back and try to transition. He's got one of the best top control that you will ever see. Definitely the best in the lightweight division next to his partner, Khabib. So we'll see what happens. Well,
and also, too, we kind of mentioned it with the Bilal fight. You know, his opponent, Charlie Olives, is fighting in the fire. He's in enemy territory. I mean, I feel like we're getting a hell of a line at what, -165?
Yeah.
Or I think that's what I got. I got it at 165. And yeah, it's my biggest play of the card, because 165, I hate to say it, but that is value, my friend. And I am not a value guy. I just feel like -165, that's an incredible line, especially considering, you know, the lines we did get with Khabib, the lines we're going to get after this fight, and the lines that led up to this fight. You know, I know Garrett has been about Islam, you know, prior to this, but even when this fight was announced, the line was not that, my friend. So minus 165, yeah, give me that all damn day. Give me minus 175. Even that, that's fine. If y'all missed out on minus 165, I feel like you're going to get value because the guy wants to win. He wants to prove to Khabib that he could be Khabib Jr. So he doesn't want to lose. And, I mean, I know Charlie Olives doesn't want to lose either, but he has a little bit more to lose, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. I know we're getting a little crazy in here going back and forth with spy. I appreciate you, Maddie, for chiming in and saying
what please come back. I enjoy your comments.
Yeah, please. This is awesome. Thank you, Forrest, for chiming in too. You know, one of us is gonna win, either Islam's gonna win and make us look good, or Charles is gonna win and make Forrest and Maddie look even better than us. So that's what happens. I'm not 100% on bets. I'm never gonna be 100% on bets. That's just the name of the game. It's gambling, folks.
I'm 100%.
Oh, yeah. You 100. Oh, yeah. But anyways, guys, that's our breakdown. UFC 280 on tap, Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm so happy this fight is finally here. I'm so excited to be here breaking down the fights for you guys. I'm just so excited for this fight card and just a few days away. So before we go, I need you guys to head over to Playmaker and follow them on all social platforms. Follow and then subscribe to their YouTube channel as well. Go over to Price Picks, head over there. Great player projections. You know, it's fun, it's easy, it's just more or less on some player projections, especially with MMA. I love the takedown props that they have there. Super easy this week, guys. Head over there, use promo code PROPSLIVE for 100% deposit up to $100. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week for some more breakdowns and putting some more money into your pockets. We're out of here. Thank you all for being here with us, and see you guys next time.
Later, haters.
Later. Howdy.